articles and ask the question, was that really necessary? I'm one of your hosts, Dan. Joining me is my co-host, Danielle.
Hello.
And today, our honorary Dan for the show will be our special guest, Eric.
Hello.
Hi, Eric.
Hi.
So, to give an introduction to Eric, Eric and I used to podcast together on another Disney podcast.
Yes.
What?
That's very crazy. True. My name on that was Prince Eric.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. How could you forget that?
I don't know how I could have forgotten that. I mean, it's sort of, it's not like I forgot. It's just more like it sort of left my brain for a little bit. And it's like, oh, wow, right.
Prince Eric. We had some very lively discussions about Frozen, among other things.
We did. Dan, can I ask you, what's your general opinion on Frozen?
It was good.
All right, we'll leave it at that.
It wasn't game-changing. Yeah, it wasn't game-changing. Right. It was good.
If we get into it, then we'll be here for another 2 hours. Because I hate it and think it's like the worst movie ever.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah, we won't get into that then. We will actually, in fact, talk about the worst movie ever. Yeah, but yeah, first off, if you haven't had a chance to listen to our last episode, be sure to do so, because Danielle got to podcast with the awesome Matt, known to most as Animat, for his YouTube channel, and they talked about the Beauty and the Beast sequel called Belle's Magical World. And it's just some quick housekeeping. You can, if you want to connect with us, you can visit our website at didweneedthatsequel.wordpress.com, or you could send us an email at didweneedthatsequelpodcast@gmail.com. We're also on social media. At Twitter, you can find us under the handle DWNTSPodcast. And if you want to find us on Facebook, it's just facebook.com/DWNTSPodcast. And also, we do have a Tumblr now under DidWeNeedThatSequelPodcast.tumblr.com. So feel free to reblog stuff. Are we posting on that? Who's posting on that, actually?
We have it, but we never use it.
Okay.
That's my job.
Yeah.
And I have not been very good at it, so...
Fair enough.
Maybe we'll do it more often. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? So maybe don't go to that one. We also want to remind the listeners that we're still after a name for you. We've had two suggestions thus far, which were the Sequelites, submitted by... Someone submitted it.
Yeah.
And Followers, submitted by Matt from the last episode. So, Eric, do you have any suggestions to add to the poll?
As for what the followers should be
name.
Called.
Yeah. Listeners, yeah.
If you can't think of it now, maybe think about it throughout the episode, and if you come up with it, just shout it out.
Okay, sure. Sure, I'll do that.
All right.
We'll edit around that. It'll be good. Yeah. Okay. So, as Eric was just saying, he believed Frozen is the worst film of all time. I disagree with him, because today we are talking about Aladdin, The Return of Jafar, which is the sequel to Aladdin. And in all honesty, after watching this one-hour film, I believe it to be the worst film of all time.
Oh, no way.
We're going to get into some heated debates.
We're going to have a great discussion. We're going to get into some great discussion, judging by that.
Every time I seem to be on any type of podcast, I give very heavy opinions. And
it's true.
A lot of arguments happen.
Okay, that's what we need. So yeah, the overview of Aladdin, Return of Jafar. For those who don't know, it was the first direct-to-video sequel that Disney did for their Renaissance era films, and it actually served as the pilot for the Aladdin TV show, so kind of set that up.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. Very important.
So, I mean, it does have some good aspects to it, I guess, in that sense. We do get the Aladdin TV show out of this film. Generally, it revolves around Iago, the parrot, or whatever it is, whatever he is.
Yes, he's a parrot.
He's a parrot? Cool. Yes. And, yeah, it's kind of, if you watched the first Aladdin and thought, needs to be more about the parrot, this is the film for you.
That's what I thought.
Because this film revolves around Iago. This is Aladdin, a.k.a. Iago. But, yeah. So, do you want to get straight into the plot?
Sure.
Yeah, so it opens with a band of robbers arriving in a hideout and starting to steal all the jewels, but with the lead robber being voiced by Jason Alexander.
George from Seinfeld, for those of you who didn't know that.
Yeah, Yeah, for anyone who's been living under a rock. He's also the brand ambassador for Catch the Day in Australia. I don't know if that's an American thing.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Me neither.
It's just like a special deals website.
Oh,
where
okay.
They're like, for 6 hours, you can get like sneakers for $60. It's pretty good. But yeah, Jason Alexander's the brand ambassador. It's weird. Uh-huh. Yeah, and once they begin to steal stuff, Aladdin shows up out of nowhere and steals it from them.
Yeah, like a Robin Hood kind of character.
Yeah, actually very much like a Robin Hood type character.
Because, you then later see him just throwing the money down to the streets. But,
Yeah.
His main goal, though, was to steal the jewel flower to give to Jasmine, his girlfriend, so he can woo her.
Right.
But, yeah, and that's how you... that sets up the semi-bad guys of the film. And then...
Yeah, because can I just say that Abysmal is really abysmal?
Abysmal? Like, I think that's where they... I never thought of that. That's probably where they got his name from.
I was pronouncing... Abysmal.
And to be fair, he's not really in it very much.
Yeah, it is a waste of time.
Yeah, strike one movie, then. So I should just say real quick, because we forgot to mention this. We already recorded this episode, okay?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Dan and I... and then our audio got messed up, so we're like kind of repeating everything that we already said. So apologies, you know.
Well, I'm here now, so hopefully I'll add some spice to it.
That's true. But I've got to bring up Jason Alexander. Like, his voice, it just doesn't match the character. It's very weird.
Yeah, it's kind of, you listen to him and you go, you don't even sound Arabic.
I disagree. I think that the character actually looks exactly like he really does in person.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I guess short and stocky.
I think it's a really good cartoonish caricature of what he really looks like. I think that maybe him, like that character, I can see how people would say that he is out of place. But I thought that like his voice matched it really well. It actually looks a lot like him.
Okay, fair enough.
Because it's like you have all of these you know, Arabian... Middle Eastern-ish characters, and then you have this random short stocky guy that looks like Jason Alexander that's just like this goofy guy. And I can see how you would say that is out of place, but I thought that his voice matched what he looked like fairly well.
I feel like his voice matched how the character looked, but just like the character in general to me didn't seem too Arabian esque. I don't know. Could just be me. It's probably me nitpicking.
I get both of those points. I saw it and I was like, I don't know. His voice just didn't match the body for me. I didn't see it. But I can see why you could see it that way, definitely. Because he does sort of have the I was gonna say George Costanza look.
Yeah.
But you know.
Yeah. Anyway, after we see this robbery, we watch Iago dig himself out of the sand and just gets annoyed at the genie's lamp.
Yeah,
it was like, damn you, Jafar. You ruined it. You ruined us. We can never get back to Agrabah.
Everybody needs to keep in mind that at the end of Aladdin, Jafar had wished himself to be a genie. And so that's why he is a genie in a lamp.
Right.
Goes back to the other movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why he's still like that. He can't just... Because I think that was actually his last wish. So he can't just unwish himself to be that. He's sort of stuck that way.
Right. Yeah. He wished to be the genie because he just assumed he'd have unlimited power. But not the case. Which is very much sort of... not the case in this movie. It seems he has a lot more power than he should, but we'll get into that.
Oh, definitely. And so essentially Iago is just annoyed at the lamp and is kicking in, having a big old angry time, and throws it down a well.
Well, he wants power.
Yeah, he wants power. He wants to be back living in the castle, having the high life, or the bird seed he can eat. So yeah, and he throws it down a well and cues the song. What is it? I'm now, from here on out, I'm only looking out for me.
I'm only looking out for me.
Yeah, because, you know, that...
I'm looking out for me.
Because that's what I wanted to hear Gilbert Godfrey sing a song.
Singing was a loose term.
Yeah, that's true. That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I've had it. I hate the baby.
The thing is,
it's time for me to fly.
I don't mind Gilbert Godfrey. I think he's.
Oh, definitely not.
You know, I think his voice is hilarious, you know. You know, just let's watch the video of him reading 50 Shades of Grey. It's hilarious. But singing, ugh, no.
No, not for me. He's hilarious. Yeah, Gilbert, if you're listening, I've seen your episode of Setlist. Really funny.
I think it's also we need to mention that, or I need to mention that, what you have to understand is that a lot of these story arcs with all of these characters are there to set up the cartoon series, because originally this was going to be split into like 5 different episodes, like 20 or so minute episodes for the TV show.
Okay.
And they just spliced it all together to be a movie, because you can sort of see where the movie breaks, where the pauses are, where the commercials would come on, or where each episode would start and finish.
Yeah.
That's all sort of built into it. And then they just figured they'd put it all together and make one movie out of it. And what's really interesting is that if you go back and you watch the intro to that TV show, you can see several different clips from this movie in that intro. And you can also hear the theme song being played at the beginning of this movie. That's like the first time that it was used was at the beginning of this movie. It's the same exact theme song that was used for every single episode within the TV show. A lot of the shots at the very beginning of the film where you have the robbers are on the horses and they're riding through the desert. If you watch the intro, there's several of those clips that are in the TV show. And if you watch the show, you're like, hey, those clips were never in the show. They were from this movie.
Well, it's funny you say that, because there were these VHS tapes released around the same time the TV show was out. And they were these princess adventures, because apparently Jasmine's episodes weren't good enough for the TV show. And they had clips from this movie as well, and the intro to those Princess Adventure series.
I have no idea about that.
Well, yeah, mostly because they were obviously directed toward little girls, so I can imagine you guys probably never watched them.
Yeah.
And they were good episodes, too. But also, Dan, you had mentioned last time we recorded that like 2 different animation companies worked on this.
Yeah, it was half done in Australia, half done in, I think it was Japan.
I did read that.
It was like, you can see it's like up until,
it's like when Aladdin and Jasmine make up, right?
Yeah, it's like the animation switches when Abbas Mal is climbing on the palace wall, resulting in Aladdin suddenly wearing his street rat clothes. Which was, I do remember watching this film. There will be a point where he goes from his prince clothes to his street rat clothes, like, unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I guess my point was that you have all these little individual character plots going on. And it seems like a lot for this one, like, 60-minute movie. But they're all there to sort of explain how these characters got to the way they are for the rest of the TV show. So, like, with Iago, he was a bad guy. But for the TV show, they liked Gilbert Godfrey. They thought he was funny. They thought that he would really work for an animated cartoon series. So they really wanted him to be in it. So they had to somehow get him from being a bad guy with Jafar to being a good guy and hanging around with Aladdin. And so this movie sort of serves as to bridge that gap. And then something that we'll be seeing later on when the genie comes back is, remember, the genie was free. The genie wanted to see the whole world. So if he wants to see everything in the world, why is it that he's still just here hanging around with these guys? I thought he was free and wanted to go everywhere. And so that's something else that they serve to explain a little bit later. So that's sort of why, you know, they didn't necessarily need to do it through song, but one of the reasons why they had that song was to explain why is Iago going from being a bad guy to hanging around with Aladdin. And so this song sort of explains his emotions, that he's just tired of Jafar and he wanted to get rid of him.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I get that, but I kind of feel like they could have just done that in a few sentences. I don't know.
Yeah, so we do get the song and dance, and it shows Iago traveling from wherever he was into the desert back into Agrabah, in which he has a run-in with Aladdin, and he tries to teach him, he's like, hey, I was hypnotized. I'm not really a bad guy. I was always on your side. It was just Jafar had me under control. And Aladdin kind of He just doesn't believe him. I think, isn't it? Yeah. Mm, yeah, he just doesn't believe. Oh, no, he picks him up and he realizes it's not broken or anything. He's like, oh, you're a liar. But then Abbas Mal and his gang decide to attack Aladdin, and due to Iago's efforts, manages to defeat them.
Yeah, because I guess one of them hurts Iago, and so Iago's like, all right, that's it. You're going to pay for this. And yeah, so it's like a selfish reason.
And he comes back and he sort of saves Aladdin. Because remember, at the very beginning, Aladdin had taken all of the stuff they had stolen.
Right.
He gave it to everybody in Agrabah. So now they're mad at him, and they come back trying to attack him. And Iago runs into him. Iago sort of gets in the way of things. Iago gets hurt. And so then Iago goes after them and saves Aladdin. Now Aladdin owes Iago something because Iago saved Aladdin from Abbas Mal and his band of thieves.
Yeah. Yeah. I also like to point out, I did forget to mention, the reason Aladdin was outside was he returned the crystal flower to Jasmine, and she's like, oh, Dad wants to talk to you about something. And so Aladdin's just freaking out, going, oh no, what's going on? He's walking around, and then he just didn't need this. He was having a weird day.
Yeah, well, you know, he was having a weird day because his girlfriend, kind of her personality became much perkier.
Hmm. Yeah, that too.
I don't know if you guys noticed that, but that tends to happen in the sequels.
Yeah. But yeah, and then, so Aladdin decides, okay, Iago saved my life. He clearly was hypnotized by Jafar. I'm going to take him back to the one place where he's not wanted and hide him there. It's a dumb move. He takes Iago back to the palace and locks him in a cage in the palace grounds.
Yeah, this scene was so funny when like Jasmine arrives and you can see Aladdin's just trying to hide the cage. And I'm like, how stupid is she? Can you not see that big cage behind him?
Well, that happens in a lot of TV shows and stuff.
Mm.
That's no excuse. That's not an excuse.
That happens a lot of times where, like, somebody's, like, wearing a disguise or something like that, and they're like, oh, where is that other person I'm looking for? It's not you. Yeah. And it's, like, really obvious that it's them. They're just wearing, like, glasses.
Right.
So that happens a lot, so that didn't really bother me.
I know it happens a lot, but I gotta be honest, I'm so sick of it. Like, Disney is better than that. They can do better.
To me, it was pretty much as like he could have just had Iago hide out in his like little rooftop palace thing that Aladdin normally lived in. Not a palace, but like, yeah.
Well, I guess he didn't want him to. He didn't want him to sort of roam free. He wanted him to be confined, and he had a bird cage. He's like, well, he's a bird, so I guess he belongs in the bird cage.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah,
I guess.
And then Genie also shows up around this time. He's like, I'm back.
Yeah, this is really random. Yeah. This was really random. They're sort of standing there, and then all of a sudden this whirlpool comes out of the, water that's right next to them, and he comes out surfing, and he has all these souvenirs, and he looks like a tourist, and I thought that that was pretty funny. And then he's like, you know, I've got souvenirs for everybody, and he puts the giant hat on Abu, and then he gives him, like, a big hot dog, and he has the plastic hula dancer where he's like, ooh, she dances.
Oh, yeah.
Also interesting to note, Genie in this movie, because of a problem with the studio, I think, is not voiced by Robin Williams. He is, in fact, voiced by Dan Castellaneta, who is, of course, most famous for voicing Homer Simpson on The Simpsons. So if you listen closely, you can sort of notice a timbre similarity between this Genie's voice and Homer Simpson's, especially, you know, when he says, like, ooh, she dances, when he goes, like, ooh, it really sounds like him. And if you're listening for that, you can sort of hear, like, oh, wow, I really hear it, if you know that and you hear it and you really listen for it. But it does sort of take, it's not his fault at all, because he's an amazing voice actor, and he's been in a ton of things. It's just, he's not Robin Williams, and that part was literally written for Robin Williams. They wrote that in there for him, and so it's just really hard to recreate that same feeling that he gave it. But for some reason, for the next movie, Aladdin and the King of Thieves, he came back and voiced the Genie.
What happened was, the whole dispute was that Robin Williams didn't want his name to be used as something to advertise the Aladdin film. He didn't want to be the reason that people came to see the movie. He just wanted them to see the movie because, you know, go see the movie because it's a good movie. But Disney clearly broke that agreement. And then eventually, Michael Eisner apologized to Robin Williams. That is why he came back. And they made another contract. And guess what? They broke it again. So that's why Robin Williams did not come back for things like Kingdom Hearts or possibly for the TV show. I don't know if he would have done that.
No, I don't think that wasn't him in the TV show.
Well, I think it was after the TV show.
It was just like really obscure, like Aladdin and the King of Thieves. That's the one that he comes back for, like the third movie they made.
Well, to be fair, the third movie is a hella better than this one.
And
so
I liked it. I mean, that one actually serves as the ending of everything, of these characters and everything, because it ends with that same guy that's telling the story in the original Aladdin, the street vendor. Remember him? He, at the very end of that movie, he, like, waves goodbye to them, and he's like, oh, and that was another Arabian Night.
All right. Yeah. No, yeah, because that was pretty much a discussion that Danielle and Hart and I had when we originally recorded, saying with Dan Castellaneta, like, he was a decent, very decent voice actor for the role. You could see he is Robin Williams-esque without being too Robin Williams. But yeah, I did agree. It was kind of, you just hear a little, every so often you just hear a little snip and you're like, oh, that's Homer Simpson. And really kind of just broke, it just took you out from the film. You're like, oh, it seems like Homer Simpson is now the genie.
And then we have the, what I was talking about earlier, the song that the genie sings about why it is that he, even though he's free and can go anywhere, why he decided to stay with them, you know, because he saw everything, but he didn't have any friends, and so he wants to be with his friends, which is them, which is why he stays there.
Which is decent enough.
That, I skipped it.
That kind of, that seems in character for Genie, because in the first film, he was so excited to be out of his cage just because he got to hang out with people.
Right.
And like, the most famous song, You Ain't Never Had a Friend Like Me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's another thing. All these songs in this movie, they're sort of, I mean, for some reason, I know them, but they're all, like, really, really similarly, being a music person, because that's my day job. I'm a music teacher. They're all really similarly composed, and they all sort of sound very, very similar.
Yes.
And, it's the exact same way that they're composed. They just sort of had a very formulaic way for these and made slightly different tunes for them.
Right. And, well, can I just point out also that, to me, one of the biggest faults of this movie is just a character aesthetic, which is Genie still having the cuffs on his wrists.
Oh, does he?
He does.
I thought he didn't.
He does. And he does for the third movie. He does for the show. I kind of feel like, animators, save yourself some money by not putting on cuffs on him.
Yeah. I don't know why they did that.
Yeah, like, that to me, because this movie has a lot of faults, but to me, that's like an easy one that could have been fixed.
I didn't even notice it, honestly.
Well, it's easy not to notice it, yeah. I think.
And shortly after this, after the big song and dance, it's kind of Aladdin has the dinner with the Sultan, and the Sultan goes, hey, Owl Dog, I know you're a street rat. That's why I want you to be the Grand Vizier.
What?
Vizier. Yeah.
Ridiculous. Yeah, Vizier. Yeah, Vizier. Vizier.
Which is
essentially...
Sorry, go ahead.
What is that?
We're looking into it. It's essentially, like the Hand in Game of Thrones. It's just like a guidance counselor. It's kind of like, hey, what should I do? And he gives him, and they consult the Sultan. So he would be consulting the Sultan on matters of state, something he's not qualified for.
Well, no, he's not. And real quick, it's funny that you say you compared it to being the Hand of the King in Game of Thrones, because, spoilers, Aladdin almost gets his head chopped off, just like Ned. Crazy. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, clearly George Armand had a hand in this.
Oh, I'm sure.
But yeah, and after this announcement's made, Aladdin tries to go. It's like, oh, actually, I don't even know how he transitions into saying Iago wasn't a bad guy, but like the Sultan clip.
So what happens was, I think that Raja came out and sort of, he got loose. No, he tricks Abu into getting loose because he has like a monk, is a banana or something. He's like, oh, monkey, like banana or something like that. And so he gets out, and then Raja comes, and all three of the comic relief characters end up bashing into the rest of the dinner, and then Jasmine's like, oh, this is what you were trying to hide from me, and then they sort of, Jasmine's mad at Aladdin, even though the Sultan lets Iago stay on, and he just says, oh, well, he's your responsibility, and if he does anything wrong, it's your fault, and I'm looking at you.
Yeah, and one thing I have to point out here is, first of all, with the whole Aladdin not telling the truth thing, we got a whole movie about him, you know, having a character arc and stuff, not doing that anymore. So I kind of wish they wouldn't have had him lying. And maybe, I feel like there could still have been a misunderstanding if he had brought Iago in. And they would be like, why did you bring him in here? And he could have just been honest.
Yeah.
I'll let... Do you guys have anything to say about that? Because I have another point that I wanted to make.
No, I kind of agree.
I mean, my overall point is that this whole thing was supposed to be just some goofy kids TV show in the 90s. And that's the only way that I looked at it. And I loved it when I was a kid. I thought that the show was full of imagination and adventure. And it had these great characters in it. And every episode brought these new monsters to this really magical place that they had to do these magical things to defeat. And it was sort of like, you know, they had to go, you know, these treasure hunting things. And I loved that kind of thing. I used to really, you know, watch the show a lot, you know, all the time when I was a kid. And I loved it. And this movie just serves to set that show up and to explain why the characters got to where it is that they got to. And that's the only way that I look at it.
No, I definitely, I think that's a really good point. But for me, like, I don't know. That doesn't excuse it for me. That's not enough for me. I don't know. But
so you look at things more in depth than I do.
I guess so. Yeah, a little.
Just because for me, I'm like, I dive back into myself as like a 7-year-old sitting on the floor after school, just, you know, watching the show. And I never thought about any of that. It was just like, ooh, they're going to this really cool place. Oh, they have to get this jewel to shove in here to get the door to open. Oh, man.
Okay, well, I'm going to bring up something real quick before I move on to my next point, because I know there's this video about Frozen that you showed me, Eric. It's by a YouTuber called Critical Hit. And they're, and they're talking about Frozen, how people talk about, not to get into a debate about Frozen, I'm just using this as a point to make, that they're talking about how, you know, people are saying it's a strong female film, but it's really not, because the dialogue in it is not intelligent. And so it's basically saying that girls can't have anything intelligent to say, because they're talking all silly all the time. And to me, while, yeah, when I was a kid, I probably would have loved Frozen, and I probably would have loved the Aladdin TV show, because I didn't watch it that much. But the thing is, that doesn't excuse the things it does, because it's making a point by what it's showing kids. And even if we might have enjoyed it, I think that kids deserve better.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Another point is that you had all these TV shows back then that were really good TV shows based on Disney movies. You had this one. You had the Aladdin cartoon. You had, even though I didn't really watch it because I thought it was really girly, you had the Little Mermaid show. I would watch it, you know, sometimes if it was on. But for the most part, if I saw it coming on, I wouldn't watch it. You had Timon and Pumbaa, which was one of the Lion King shows that came out. Well, the only Lion King show that came out. And one that a lot of people don't talk about and is sort of forgotten, and I thought this was one of the best ones that they ever did based on a movie, was Buzz Lightyear of Star Command, which was was in the really late 90s, even early 2000s. I remember being in like 4th, 5th grade and that show being on every day after I got home from school. And I used to really love that show. I thought it was so full of, you know, action, and just it was really imaginative. And it was just a really fun show with all this group of really cool characters that you really grabbed onto. And something I didn't know about that show, there was this one character that was sort of like a, you know, it's Buzz and his group of space rangers. So in the Toy Story movies, you had Buzz Lightyear, the toy that the character is based on. This TV show is like what the actual show would have been.
Right.
So it's Buzz Lightyear in Star Command with his group of other
Space Rangers
that go around and fight Emperor Zurg. And so you had Buzz, you had this one of the other, you had Buzz, you had this a girl who could like walk through walls. You had this one sort of alien-looking guy who was the big, strong guy. And then you had a robot Space Ranger.
XR,
yeah. And one of the guys that did... I think there were two guys that did his voice. And I think one of them was Neil Flynn, who most people remember as the janitor on Scrubs, or currently now playing the dad in The Middle,
yeah,
which is on ABC, which is that's Disney.
Right.
So maybe there's some connection there because he has his... I never knew that was him because in the show, he speaks with this very robotic voice. Like, they put the voice through sort of a roboticizer, and it sounds very electronic. But he was one of the two guys that did the original voice before they put it through that.
Okay.
And so that was another show that was a really good example of a good TV show that was taken from a Disney movie. And I just can't see any way that they would take Frozen and make a good TV show out of it. There's just, to me, there's nothing to it. There's no setup. There's no setting. There's no other characters. There's just nothing to it that would create a whole series. And all of these other shows had that.
Well, I think you'd be surprised, but I'll move on from that. But real quick also, and let me just... Again, Dan and I sort of talked about this last episode, but the fact that Iago, I think this film sets up some really cool sort of character arcs, especially with Iago, but to me, I don't think Iago is a strong enough character to get this character arc, because I don't think the film's that bad. I don't know what you guys think of that.
I thought it was fine. I thought it was an interesting, you know, to see him trying to prove that he's not a bad guy, and how he doesn't like Jafar. I thought it was fine. I never thought anything about it.
Yeah. Speaking of Jafar, though, back onto on the plot. This was kind of this was happening. Abba's Mal finds Jafar's lamp, gives an old rub. Out comes Jafar, and whilst technically Abba's Mal is Jafar's master, Jafar's like, do what I say or else. So it's kind of, it's a really weird, as we're saying earlier, it's a really weird position for a genie who technically is the slave in this situation actually take control by coming across as like more powerful than he actually is.
He every time Abba's Mal makes a wish, he takes it too literally, and he purposefully does it incorrectly. Like, he knows what he wants, but he does it in a different way that makes him... It makes him think, you know, do what I say, or else when you wish for something, you're not gonna get what it is that you want. So like he wishes for like a famous sunken treasure or something, and so he says, okay, you want the sunken treasure? I'll give you the sunken treasure. And so he transports him underwater to where the sunken treasure is, and there's like an octopus there, and then he's like, no, take me back, I don't want to be here. And then he asks for another treasure. I forget what happens the second time, but it's something similar where it's like,
no, because
not exactly what he wants, and he does it overly too literal.
No, because getting
him think that.
Sorry, I was just gonna say no, because his two wishes. Because he never got to use his third wish. His two wishes were going under, wishing for the sunken treasure, and then when he gets taken out of the ship back above ground, Jafar's like, "That's two wishes. You've only got one more," and he never uses the third wish. Yeah.
Yeah. It's to go there. That's right. He wishes to go there, and then he wishes to come back. And so then he has one last wish that he never gets to use.
But essentially, Jafar's like, take me to Agrabah. And he's like, nah, why the hell would I do that? And he's like, oh, I need to get revenge on Aladdin. And Abba's Mal's like, I also need to get revenge on Aladdin, so I'm totally fine with that. And essentially, Jafar somehow, whilst in Agrabah, gets to like infiltrate the palace. And then reveals himself to Iago and is like, hey, Iago, I'm going to kill Aladdin if you don't go along with my plans. I'm not saying bad stuff can happen to you, but bad stuff will probably happen to you.
So basically, Jafar is trying to get revenge on Aladdin and take back over Agrabah and take over the palace. So he gets this plan where he gets Iago to take the Sultan and Aladdin alone to some remote place where Jafar is going to attack them. But before that happens, Jasmine's mad at Aladdin because he lied to her about Iago. And so we have our fourth song, because if you count the intro song, forget about his eyes, that one.
This song was nostalgic for me. I was surprised. I was like, wow, I recognize this. This makes me feel, yeah, I felt good inside. I was like, oh my gosh, what is going on? And it wasn't a bad song at the end once Iago was gone. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, it was, a lot of these songs and a lot of these lines that they say and a lot of the images of this movie are very nostalgic for me. Just because the personal connection that I have with this movie, when I used to go over my grandparents' house when I was, really young, over in New Jersey. I live in Pennsylvania near Danielle. So when I used to go over my grandparents' house in New Jersey, for some reason, I don't know why this was there. I don't know where they bought it. I never remember the time they bought it. It was just sort of always there. One of the only movies they had was this movie on VHS, and so we used to watch it all the time, and my sister and I used to thought it was the funniest movie that we had ever seen, and there were so many things in it that we used to laugh at, and that I just used to just bring up a lot of memories of going over my grandparents' house and watching this, and this song was really one of them. I didn't remember the Genie's song. I sort of remembered parts of Iago's song. I remember the very beginning of it when he says that thing about, I've had it. I hate to be dramatic. For some reason, I really remember that just because it was so catchy to me. It all rhymed. But this song, I don't know why this song I really remember. Of any of the songs, this one's the one that I really remember. I think it's because at a certain point, the Genie starts doing all of this magic in it. And I just remember that. I don't know why. He makes Aladdin's face appear in the mirror because him and Iago are trying to convince Jasmine, sort of using reverse psychology, to go back to Aladdin. So Iago's singing, just forget about love. So he's saying, oh, forget about this. Forget about how he used to make you feel. Forget about this. And thus that makes her remember all of it. And then they get back together. So it's very, that song of any of them is the most nostalgic for me.
Yeah. Speaking of a healthy Iago, that's also kind of what happens next as part of Jafar's plan. Iago goes if you need to have a private conversation with the Sultan, you should go here, which then leads to Jafar capturing the Sultan with the help of Abbas Mal.
He actually catches the Genie first in Abu, right?
Oh, yeah. He confronts, Genie and Abu in the palace gardens, yeah.
And that's when I thought, okay, this is the part where, I know I'm just being so negative about this film, but this is the part where it's he seems to have more power, Jafar, than he should, because the Genie should definitely have more power than Jafar because he's free.
Mm.
Jafar should be severely limited in terms of what he can do with his power, and the Genie should easily be able to get around him.
I also don't understand. Yeah, that was one part that I didn't understand. Not that it made it a bad movie for me, but
right.
I didn't get why. So what happens is that so Iago is taking the Sultan and Aladdin to this special place so that they can have their private conversation. But really, he's leading them to where Jafar is going to capture them.
Yeah.
After they leave, the Genie and Abu come running up, and they have a picnic basket, and he's oh, I wanted to go with them too. And Jasmine says oh no, they're just gonna be on their own. And then he's oh, you know what this means? More food for us. And then they just start stuffing their faces with all the food. That part I thought that was the funniest part in the whole movie. I used to love that part, just the way they just start stuffing their faces with the food. But then after that is when Jafar captures Abu and the Genie. And for some reason, the Genie gets put in this genie-proof glass sphere, which looks really claustrophobic, first of all. And second of all, I don't understand how there's anything that could keep, I don't understand how there's anything that could contain the genie, because the genie, we've seen him shrink himself. He can do anything that he wants. He's completely magical and has every power to do anything.
Right.
So that, of anything, I just didn't understand how he was able to capture him. You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't be able to capture him.
Yeah. It seems to be a big kind of plot hole.
No, I agree.
But yeah, and then eventually the Jafar captures the Sultan, and it leads to, like, this big kind of chase with Aladdin on the magic carpet, but then the carpet gets trampled by all these horses. Eventually the carpet starts working again. Aladdin gives chase, and then Abbas Mal is riding one of the horses, and they go over a waterfall. Turns out they can fly.
Yeah.
More evidence suggesting just how stupidly powerful Jafar is in this situation. And then...
Oh, but I will say real quick that I liked the continuity in this scene when Aladdin doesn't know that Jafar is involved, and he says, oh, wow, like, he knows sorcery or something like that. I liked that line.
Yeah, that was pretty good, actually. And eventually Aladdin gets knocked off the carpet by a water spout, and it's revealed that all the horses were actually Jafar. And kind of like as Aladdin's falling down the waterfall, is about to get smashed on the rocks, and like Jafar catches him and just kind of moves him off to the side to like safety. And Abbas Mal's like, what the hell? Why are you doing this? Like, he's about to get smooshed. And Jafar's like, he's gonna get what's coming.
Well, he did it so that he could, because he needed him to get framed for that. And if he died along with it, then he couldn't get framed for it. Because if he was the one that did it, why would he die?
Yeah.
So he needed him to live so that he could, they could think he did.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, okay, that actually makes sense. Why. Yeah.
It does make sense, but guys, I'm frustrated right now. It's like the moment where Voldemort just...
Why? Please
Voldemort,
tell us.
I'm gonna tell you. Voldemort just keeps talking, and it just leads to his defeat, right? In the Harry Potter books, that always happens. Voldemort goes on this speech, and oh, Harry comes, and he can defeat him. Like, why all this talking? Why all this pushing it off?
Well, that's another classic villain thing where they go into their big long speech, which gives the hero time to escape.
Exactly. I can't take it. It's like in The Rescuers Down Under.
No, this one actually made sense because he needed him to be alive so he could get framed for it, and then he would be killed, as we see coming up.
I will say, yeah, that did make a lot more, when you explain it like that, yes it did, but still.
I don't know what to tell.
Ugh. Anyway.
Yeah. And then, so eventually, due to that framing making it look like Aladdin killed it, Aladdin returns to Agrabah, and Jasmine's like, what the hell? You got my dad captured. Everyone, send him to the dungeons. And Aladdin's trying to explain to her. It's like, hey, no, I didn't do it. It was Jafar. And she's like, oh, as if I'm going to believe that. And Aladdin gets thrown into the dungeons, only to find that the Sultan, Jasmine, Genie, and Abu have also been locked up. And it's like...
And the carpet.
Yeah, and it's like... Yeah. And it's kind of, so that's how it's kind of revealed that Jafar was actually posing as Jasmine. I think that was the reveal. Or it was either that or when it was like, when it's about to get Ned Starked. And,
well, the Jasmine, it's revealed to us that Jafar was Jasmine, but then he reveals himself to Aladdin right before the Ned Stark moment.
Yeah, at the end.
Yeah, so that's kind of what happens. Like, Aladdin's getting marched to his death, is going to be killed, so Jafar would just have total power. And yeah, right before it happens, he walks up to him dressed as Jasmine, and then like just does a creepy face change. Stuff of nightmare, folks.
Yeah. And all the while, Iago's trying to, they're all really mad at Iago, but Iago's trying to redeem himself. Right.
Yeah, remember, Iago didn't get locked up.
That's right.
So Iago is trying to, so Aladdin is getting executed. In one of the most longest execution preparations of all time, where like they have to slowly march him up like a thousand steps to the guy who's sharpening his sword, and then march him back out to the place where the actual execution is going to take place. And I remember thinking when I saw this, like, that's got to be the worst. Like, if you were Aladdin, that's got to be terrible. Because you have this slow march where all you're thinking, like, you're about to die. And you have this slow march. It doesn't just like, okay, done with. No, you have this slow preparation
for
it.
Yeah, definitely.
Where you just have to wonder what's going to happen to you and what it's going to be like and what it's going to feel like. So as he's doing that, as they're marching Aladdin, Iago is lifting up the genie's glass sphere and trying to drop it so that he gets freed. And then right before Aladdin, like, the guy, they put him in the guillotine, and the guy picks up the sword and is about to, you know, drop it and chop his head off, he frees the genie, who runs out and saves Aladdin.
Just in the nick of time. That was actually pretty awesome. I was like, yes, thank you.
Essentially, yeah, but so Aladdin's saved, but Jafar and Abu Ismail don't really know that either, because the end's kind of showing they're celebrating the death of Aladdin, and then Abu Ismail's like, oh, that means I get my third wish, and Jafar's like, nope, your third wish has to be you have to set me free. He's like, what? He's like, yeah, look at all this gold and all this power. Imagine all the power I'll have if you do set me free.
Yeah, so he starts just giving him all of the all of these treasures without him wishing for it.
Yeah. So he's kind of like, yeah, if I'm free, I can just do this all the time. And Abu Ismail's like, oh, that's tempting. And oh yeah, and Aladdin had pretty much decided, Iago's like, oh, we should run away, like Jafar's won here, like we need to leave. And Aladdin's like, nah, I reckon if we destroy the lamp, we'll be good. So whilst Jafar is conjuring up all the gold, Abu sneaks in trying to steal the lamp, and Abu Ismail sees it, and they're like, oh snap, Aladdin ain't dead. So yeah, and that leads to the final fight scene.
Yes.
Which was really well animated, I thought it was really great, the animation for there.
But can we just talk about the part where carpet shatters? Is he okay? Do we see him after that?
I think he gets put back together.
Okay, I'm glad, because I didn't see that. I saw him shatter and I was like, whoa.
What happens to Abbas Maul?
Oh, he just hangs from the tree, because...
Yeah, but they never show what happens to him.
Well,
then.
They do.
Yeah, no, it's a post-credit scene.
Oh, it is? Oh, I didn't watch that.
Then, yeah, because we're reading up about it. So, yeah, it says, after the credits, Abu Ismail, still stuck on a tree branch, suddenly realizes that with Jafar and the lamp gone, he will never have his third wish.
I think that's probably the best part of the movie, actually. That was great.
Apparently, he was in other episodes of the show.
He was. Mm-hmm.
With Jason Alexander still voicing him.
So, essentially, they take on god-level Jafar, who's just, like, an uber-jacked genie with all this power.
Yeah, right.
And,
by the way, that, I think, was that in Aladdin? Did he look like that at the end of Aladdin ever?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just remember him being scrawny.
Okay, because in Kingdom Hearts 2, he appears in that form. I don't know if they got that from this movie. Or...
No, it's in Aladdin at the very end. He does. When he wishes to be a genie, he does become a genie, and he's really big and... I guess sort of muscular looking compared to the actual genie. So yeah, that's from Aladdin.
Yeah. So essentially it's just Aladdin, Jasmine, the genie, Abu and Carpet engage Jafar in this monstrous genie form in combat. But even when bound by the rules of the genie, he easily outmatches them, which is dumb, using his tremendous powers to stop them from getting a lamp. So it's kind of, I don't know. This doesn't seem right in the like consistency of the, what is it? The rules of the genie.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there.
It's like, yeah. And then, essentially, he opens up the ground, creates this fissure, and there's all this magma just flowing through the castle, and you're like, ooh!
And then we also have this false ending where, before they had, the genie had saved Aladdin.
Yeah.
And he had saved everybody and they're all back together. Iago, like, they're like, okay, Iago, you're, you know, I owed you one. And, well, he doesn't say that, but he says, like, okay, I don't have to be here anymore, so I can leave. And then he keeps saying, like, really exaggeratedly, like, oh, I don't owe you one thing. Everything, I'm done with everything. I don't owe you a single thing. And it's just so obvious. Okay, he's going to come back and do whatever the final thing is.
Right.
It's like really exaggerated. I don't owe you anything. My good deed is done.
Yeah, which...
He like repeats it over and over.
And that's exactly what happens. It's just...
Oh, yeah.
Iago then shows up. Like, everyone's pretty much doomed. And then Iago shows out of nowhere... picks up the lamp, Jafar sees it, is like, oh, zap. Iago gets knocked out, and then we're like, with his last ounce of strength, just kicks the lamp into the magma, and Jafar implodes into dust.
Another nostalgic image for me, Iago sitting there trying to push the lamp in. I don't know why, I just always remember that.
Yeah, so yeah, essentially Jafar just explodes into dust, similar to Voldemort as well.
Well, yeah, in the movie, yeah.
And, and essentially just ends with, like, Iago recovering, since it's among a genie's set of laws that he can't use his powers to kill. So, that doesn't make sense. He can be stupidly powerful, but he can't kill people. Like, that's where he crosses the line.
And it's not like he didn't kill Yago, because Yago, didn't he, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he fall or, like, hit a rock or something? Like,
I can't remember.
I can't remember either now, because I don't think, well, anyway, yeah, I guess we don't need to dwell on it, but.
Yeah. And essentially, the film ends with Aladdin going, oh, I don't want to be the Grand Vizier, like, I still need to see the world. And Jasmine's like, I'll come with. So they're going on a Kentucky tour.
Which I guess is, like you said, Eric, like, setting up the show. Because I guess, is that what they do in the show? Are they seeing the world?
No, they stay in Agrabah and just
a bunch of
magical things. It sets up the show in that, okay, and one of the other things it sets up the show in the sense that Iago is now a good guy and is now with them.
Yeah.
Right. The genie who was free and wanted to see the world is now sticks around and hangs around with them. And also, the last thing that I hadn't touched on before was that they couldn't just have Jafar be the villain in every single episode. I mean, some other shows do things similarly to that, but they didn't want to do that with Aladdin because you have this great magical world and you could have all of these different villainous beings sort of come to life and that they have to fight against, and every episode could have a new one of those, and it could be a big treasure hunt show and all these different, they wanted it to be a large variety of villains. And so they needed to get Jafar to a place where he didn't have to be the villain in every episode, or where he couldn't be the villain.
Right.
And so that's why, so they destroy him in this one, which is why he never comes back then during the show.
Yeah.
Or right.
Maybe, does he at all? I don't think he does.
Nah. Well,
I don't know.
I don't know. So anyway, apologies.
So it just serves to, you know, to set all of that up. And a lot of these TV shows had their first few episodes all as part of one story arc that set the whole show up like this. And so this one just got pushed together in this movie for some reason.
Well, okay. You just brought up an interesting point that I can't believe I didn't think about this before. But have you guys ever watched the show Avatar or The Legend of Korra?
No.
Yes, so much. Yes, I love it.
You have. Okay, so let me just put this out. I know you haven't watched Eric, but hopefully I can explain it properly because Dan will get it, hopefully. I think you will.
Yeah.
So with Avatar, just say that that's our Aladdin movie because that was the original show.
Okay.
And then we get Korra.
Yeah.
And to me, what Return of Jafar failed to do that Korra does properly, because yeah, Return of Jafar setting up a show, okay, fine, but Korra takes things slowly and lets the characters come into their own and just does it so much better. Like, do you know what I mean? Because you've seen the show, so you get it.
I know what you mean. It was kind of, Legend of Korra was always gonna be a hard act to follow. Last event, it was always gonna be a hard act to follow, but I feel like Legend of Korra definitely did that. Season 2, it was like, maybe not. It starts to get a little bit inconsistent, but then 3 and 4, they brought back all the consistencies and showed all the challenges she had been facing, and it was kind of with each kind of challenge she did face, they then reflected that in her character by being slightly changed because of that experience.
Yes.
Which is what I think you were saying earlier with Aladdin, how the first film was about, hey, no, because he lied all the time, he was getting himself into trouble, and then in this film,
right,
he was still lying even though like the lesson had been learned. So it's like his previous experiences weren't affecting his current morale.
Yes, and that's right. And that's what, Eric, I would strongly encourage you to watch those shows, because to me, I can't believe I didn't think of that earlier. Avatar and Legend of Korra are perfect examples of being able to create a kid's show that's really fun, but also tell a really good story. Because especially in Avatar, you have these characters who go from the first season and actually have character growth, and it stays consistent with what happens to them.
Another show that's doing that pretty well is Star Wars Rebels.
Oh, really?
That's on Disney XD. That's doing that really, really well at the moment. The character growth on that is just, it's so good.
That's interesting. Okay. There you go.
I don't know. As a kid, I never really paid attention to that kind of thing. I just saw a goofy TV show.
Well, that's the thing. Avatar, I just watched it. Like, I haven't even finished Korra. I'm on the 4th season right now. And so, like, Avatar, like, I just watched that, like, say a year ago. I finished it, and I never watched it. I always thought it looked silly, too, but trust me, like, it is one of the best TV shows, in my opinion, Avatar.
Mm. It's fantastic.
Yeah, seriously.
So that was The Return of Jafar. We've discussed it.
Yes.
Now this is the part. The fun segment is reading Amazon reviews, which I'm going through. Amazon reviews. Do you have any, Danielle? Because I'm looking through some now and I'm going, ooh.
You go first, and then, because I have to bring up the page.
I'm just looking for some. Hey, love the movie, but this is about the DVD. A lot of bootlegs going around. Be careful on buying any of the Aladdin movies until they are released from the vault. So someone bought a pirated movie, so got they're like, yeah, this is a good movie, but yeah, I was like, this is a good movie, but this was a pirated copy.
Oh man, that's funny.
Let's see.
Oh yeah. There was, there's this one that kind of reflected the Australian and Japan or Singapore, whoever it was, who were doing both thing. I was like, oh, I hated this film. I loved Aladdin and thought this one would be as cool as the original. Boy, was I wrong. The Sultan's eyebrows just disappear at dinner and it's just plain rotten. So that's kind of playing at the inconsistencies of the animation.
Here's one. This is titled, The Other Two Are Great, This One Mediocre. And he says, we rank this 27 out of the 41 Disney animated movies that we own. So first of all, reviewer, what 41 movies do you own made by Disney that this would make the 27th?
Yeah.
Because, like...
That's...
Yeah, because there are, like, 53 animated movies from Snow White to Frozen, and this one's not counted in that. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that one of those will make 27.
I have some YouTube comments.
Oh, okay.
This one is from one of the videos of Nothing in the World Quite Like a Friend, the song. This comment says, okay, I just love this song. Wonder what it would have been if Robin had sung this one. Lucky me, the image of Homer doesn't come to mind whenever I hear this. Of course, because the guy, the voice of Homer Simpson sang the song. That's what they're referencing. This one says, this song is terrible, but I can't stop listening to it. this person, I don't think, realized that Robin Williams didn't sing it because they said, I am astonished Robin Williams had amazing vocals in this song. This one says, what's worse than having a character voiced by Robin Williams in the first movie replaced by someone who sounds nothing like Robin Williams in the sequel? And then the next part of the comment says, when that someone is a genuinely talented voice actor like Dan Castellaneta.
He was given a bad hand.
Did anyone else notice that the genie in this movie is not the same as in the first and third movie?
Duh, person. Oh, duh.
Yeah, that person's pretty stupid.
I've got another one here, just a short one. It's about Gilbert Gottfried. Gilbert Gottfried singing this song, and it's compared to... It says, he makes Danny DeVito sound like Luciano Pavarotti. So
Pavarotti, of course, being the most famous opera, one of the most famous opera singers to ever exist.
Yep.
He died about 10 years ago. He was extremely famous tenor, most famous for singing Nessun Dorma, which is one of the most famous arias in all of opera history. In case you didn't know.
Yeah, so comparing Danny DeVito to... Yeah, comparing Danny DeVito to Pavarotti is huge.
Oh, yeah.
It's saying that...
I have some comments for Just Forget About Love. This one says, this is such an underrated song because it's both a villain and love song at the same time. And then the other one says, I love how Aladdin has no idea what's going on, but she's not mad anymore, so he just goes with it.
Oh my god, that's so true.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah.
Here's one. It's titled Disappointing, and it says, I just purchased the video today, and I'm sad to say that it was a huge disappointment. The first thing that caught my eye was that the animation lacked the elegance present in the first movie.
Well, because it wasn't a theatrical film release. This was meant to be a TV show, once again.
Oh, very true. Very sad. Oh, here you go. Very Saturday morning cartoon-like.
It was a Saturday morning cartoon.
Well, yeah. So, yeah. Reviewer, come on. I thought this was going to be funny, but I'm going to stop reading because it's not. So.
Yeah.
No. Keep going. This is pretty funny that they don't realize things.
It's not much more. I'll just say, that aside, the plot was remarkably weak. Yes, we agree. I kept waiting for the boom to come in. It didn't. What's the boom? Like the cool storyline, I guess?
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing. Yeah.
And then another huge disappointment were the songs, which had no meaning for me. It seemed as if they were just written to prolong the movie. agreed reviewer.
This one says, pause at 2:19 and Jasmine looks like a fish. What happened to the beautifully drawn Jasmine in the first movie?
Yeah, that's so true.
I think
this one says, alternative title for this song, Reverse Psychology 101. Which is absolutely true.
Yeah, I'll make this the last one. Okay. I like the movie, but it did not work properly. Overall, God, I love this movie though. Overall, good. I love this movie though. Like, how did you watch it? It didn't work properly. Yeah. So that is Amazon reviews.
All right.
And YouTube.
Yeah, and YouTube. We added YouTube.
Yeah, and YouTube.
That's Eric's YouTube corner. We'll call it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So to wrap it up, time to ask the big question: did we need that sequel, Eric?
Yes, because it helped set up a very good cartoon series. So we did need it to set that up.
Okay. And how many stars out of 5?
Yeah, 3.5.
Yep. Danielle, do you believe we need the sequel?
Well, shocking to say, I know, but I'm going to say no.
Okay.
But the reason... boo me all you want. But the reason I say no is because, to me, I think the third movie, like Eric is nostalgic for this one, I'm sort of nostalgic for the third one, and I think that is a genuinely good sequel. The third one, I think this one could have been skipped.
Yep.
We could have had the third one, which is much better drawn and produced, and that could have easily been a prequel to the show. Yep. Sorry, prequel to the sequel. Because then we could have seen this kind of the same things that were happening in the show, just Aladdin and Jasmine would be married.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess my opinion is, I actually know how many stars. How many stars? I forgot.
Oh, 2.5.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Yeah. No. Yeah. I think I'm actually going to agree with Eric that we did need that sequel, simply because we did need a sequel. Just because the film finishes with them not getting married and like it's everything's up in the air. So I feel like we definitely needed a sequel.
That's true. That's also
whether we needed this sequel is another question. But we did need a sequel to Aladdin, and I'd probably go for
that's true. Yeah.
Nah, I'm gonna be bad. 1 star.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, to be fair, I will say that to me, and I know you really liked it, Eric, much more than we did. But even though it was a bad sequel, like last episode, I said that it wasn't much better than Belle's Magical World.
I didn't think that was that bad.
I know. I disagree with you. But, but I'll say that this was actually, to me, much better than Belle's Magical World.
Oh, okay.
Even though it was still bad.
Yeah. But yeah, so just wrapping things up now. So our next episode will be released in 2 weeks or slightly less than 2 weeks, depending on when I can get this up. And we will be discussing Aladdin the King of Thieves with the practical folks over on YouTube. So look forward to that. Thank you for coming, Eric. It's been a pleasure.
It was a pleasure to have you.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no worries, man.
I was truthfully looking forward to doing this.
Yeah.
I really had a lot to say about this and, excuse me, brought up a lot of, you know, really good memories for me.
Yeah,
so I really enjoyed being on.
Awesome. No worries then. But then, until then, talk to you all later.
It's a fool to let you run the show. I'm cutting you loose, pal. Look out below. I read the dirt sheet. C'est la vie. Hope all goes well. I'm looking out for me.